Hey, Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I'm so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc.
Nailed
not
pod, it.
Just PODC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time. Unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't
Thanks.
Want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay, thanks.
Rude.
Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
And today, I'm going to tell you the story of the wrongful conviction of Marcellus Williams. But before we get started, Samantha, what are we drinking?
This is, I gather, a pick your poison case. So,
yes.
Do with that what you will.
Yeah.
As
I'm
always.
I'm drinking a Truly. And I think originally you both were drinking something. We're actually re-recording the intro to this because, you know, technology. Oopsie. And it was on my part this time.
I'm just glad you figured it out, so it won't be a problem next time. That's all I
have to say. Same. But I will say before we get into the episode and before, you know, we switch it back over to the regular episode, there's a little bit of things that we want to cover first. First, I want to say that I continuously reference that this case takes place in Illinois, and it does not. About halfway, I switch, and it takes place in, where does it take place again?
Missouri.
It takes place in Missouri. But before we get into the episode, I do want to say that, you know, while we're going to be talking about Marcellus Williams' wrongful conviction, there's a couple of things that I want to touch on first. Number one is before we get into the episode, I am going to tell you that I am 100% certain. And Samantha, you can say if you're 100% certain or not either, that Marcellus Williams is not guilty of this crime.
I mean, based on any evidence presented whatsoever or, you know, lack thereof.
Based
whatever,
on the evidence,
however you want
yeah.
to put it. I would say no. Yeah, definitely yeah. not guilty.
He is not guilty of this crime. And you'll hear why in the episode. But because of that, I implore you, if you're not going to listen to the full episode, I want you to go into the show notes because the very first link in the resources portion of the show notes is going to be a petition that you can go and sign, because at this moment, Marcellus Williams has less than, I think it's 40 days before he's going to be executed. And as much as I'm against the death penalty and things like that, you know, all of that stuff, but there's enough questionable things in this case that it wouldn't be okay for this to continue. So listen to the episode, you know, come up with your own opinion, but I do, you know, beg of you, go and click on that link, sign the petition. The other thing that I want to cover is that while we're going to be mostly focusing on Marcellus Williams and his wrongful conviction, I want you to remember that at the end of the day, a woman died and her name is Felicia Gale. And normally we focus mostly on the victims of this, but in this case, there's multiple victims. And we might have another victim on our hands very soon if he is not exonerated or if there's not a stay of his execution. But I do want you to remember that there is a murdered woman in this case, and there are two murdered women, actually. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about this. There are multiple victims. We aren't focusing on the murder victim as much, but I think that that's still important. So, with all that said, enjoy the show. Felicia Gale was born and grew up in Rockford, Illinois. She had graduated from University of Illinois with a degree in journalism and made her way in that career. By 1981, she was working as a reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, where she stayed until 1992. She left the newspaper to pursue more philanthropy and volunteer work. I always mess up with that word. She and her childhood sweetheart, Daniel Pikus, were married for 18 years. They were kind of a power couple. He was a doctor and she was a talented journalist, philanthropist.
I think it would be a philanthropist.
She really did a lot.
I think it is.
Yeah, philanthropist.
Okay. Journalist, philanthropist. She really did a lot to try and help others and the community as a whole. Since she worked for the paper, there's actually a lot of information on her in there. And it's like, it's pretty clear that she was like a kind and caring person. Like, her and her husband didn't have children, but she was really involved in like different aspects of the community and helping children who were struggling and things like that. Like, she was genuinely just a really good person. And a lot of people loved her. On August 11th, 1998, someone broke into their home and stabbed Felicia 43 times with a butcher's knife. Her husband was the one
good
to find
grief.
Her. Yes. That's a lot.
That's a lot, seems like an understatement, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. During the investigation, it was discovered that her purse, jacket, and her husband's laptop were all missing from their home. The neighbors were shocked by the news of the murder, not just that it was Felicia that was murdered, but that it had happened at all in their little community. Felicia and her husband lived in a pretty affluent neighborhood, and it was a gated community. Quote, "This is one of the best neighborhoods in the area," said Lee Durham, Gale's next door neighbor. "It really kind of floored us," unquote. At the time of her murder, Felicia was 42 years old. She was a petite woman with long dark hair, and just 3 miles away from her home, where she was killed, another woman who matched her description was murdered in the exact same way. That woman was 40-year-old Deborah McLean. She had been stabbed multiple times with a kitchen knife from her own kitchen, and that knife was left in her body, just like Felicia. So the knife that killed both women came from their own kitchens, and the murderer left the knife behind.
So fingerprints, DNA, because it usually gets slippery, which means they usually end up cutting themselves somehow.
Oh, honey, we're going to get to it.
Okay.
Yeah. But you have two women who look very similar. They do come from like very different walks of lives. You know, Felicia was in a high, you know, a gated community, affluent neighborhood. Deborah lived in like an apartment, not, you know, in the best part of town, I guess, is what they said. But a lot of it was very similar, you know, especially the murder. So do with that what you will. At both crime scenes, there was an abundance of evidence. For instance, at Felicia's home, there were bloody footprints. The murder weapon was left behind, and it had fingerprints on it. Blood and skin were found under her fingernails. And there was head hair and pubic hair found at the scene.
And this was when?
This was 1998.
Okay.
Let me make sure I get this right. 1998, August 11th, 1998. For a year, the case went unsolved. That was until her husband, Dr. Pikus, put up a $10,000 reward. That's when a witness came forward, Henry Cole. Henry Cole had just been released from jail in June of 1999. And one of the first things he did was he headed to the police station to tell them that while in jail, his cellmate, Marcellus Williams, had confessed to the murder.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Henry wasn't the only one to come forward once there was a reward offered. Laura Asaro, Marcellus's former girlfriend, also came forward with a statement. She told police that Marcellus admitted the murder to her. She also told police that Marcellus had scratches on him at the time. The other key information she told police was that Marcellus drove his car to Felicia's home that day. She also stated that she saw a purse in his car and it contained Felicia's ID card.
So all of this stuff, and you just didn't think to come forward until there was a reward involved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Outside of that, there are even more problems with both of these statements. The problem is that during that time, Marcellus's car wasn't actually running. It wasn't drivable. So he couldn't have driven the car there. And multiple witnesses, multiple people at this time said, you couldn't drive his car. It wouldn't drive.
Maybe he Flintstone carred it, like.
Maybe.
Used his feet.
Good on him. I bet that takes some thighs. And the ID that Laura said was in the car, Marcellus's car that she had seen in a purse in his car, was actually found in Felicia's home during the investigation.
Whoops.
Oops. And just want to note that at this time, Marcellus was actually in jail for robbery. So he was looking at like a 20-year sentence for robbing like a Burger King or something like that. And that's how Henry Cole was his cellmate. And he came forward and said this. And then Laura came forward and said this. But while he was in jail, Laura Asaro had the keys to his car. And from some stuff I saw, she was actually living in the car that didn't drive. Yeah. When police searched the car, they found a ruler and a calculator that had gone missing on the day of Felicia's murder from Felicia's home. The items that were found didn't have any fingerprints on them. And they were found inside his car. Again, I want to say Laura had keys to the car and could have been living in the car at the time. And Marcellus was in jail, unable to get to the car. Another issue is that in Henry's statement, he says that Marcellus took the bus, not his car, to commit the crime. So you have two conflicting statements.
How do you get home? Because I can tell you right now, 40 plus times, that dude was covered in blood, whoever did that. So there ain't no way he's riding the bus.
Thank you. That's a really good point, you know? But sure. Whatever. Now, the laptop that went missing, they were able to recover that laptop. And it was from a person who claimed Marcellus sold it to them, which Marcellus confirms that he sold this laptop to this person. But he also said he got the laptop from Laura because Laura had asked him to sell the laptop.
This is starting to look a little fishy.
Just a little bit.
Also, I'm really bothered by the fact you said it was what, a ruler and a calculator?
Yeah.
What kind of weirdo steals a ruler and a calculator from somebody's apartment and keeps them? Those are such weird items.
Their home, like their actual home. Yeah. And the only reason they knew it was hers is because it had the old newspaper she used to work for stamped on the ruler and the calculator.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Souvenirs.
Possibly. Maybe. Or it could have just been in the laptop bag that was taken.
Oh, true.
You know? Who knows?
Who carries a ruler with them?
Well, it was back in the 90s. Kelsey probably just said, I do. She seems like a ruler carrier.
Just in case I need to draw a straight line, that always comes in handy.
I have a tape measure in my purse, actually.
I do too.
You never know when you need one.
Well, you crochet.
You never know what you might need to measure.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm not judging anybody for having that in their purse. I'm not judging anybody for having anything in their purse. I carried a cheeseburger in my purse for 2 weeks and forgot about it. That was a mistake. I don't carry a purse anymore.
Fair. No judgment. I'm just really confused. But okay, sure. I'm not a journalist, so I don't know what they normally carry with them.
Yeah, I don't know. The 90s were a wild time. I was 8 then. So the other issue with Laura's statement is that she was a known police informant. She would often inform on others to get herself out of trouble with the police. She had been arrested for solicitation, and again, this is not me judging anybody for doing sex work by any means. But she was arrested for it because it was illegal where she's at. I'm not saying I think it needs to be illegal. I want to make that clarification. She is also addicted to crack cocaine. Not judging there either. But what I am judging her on is that several of her family members later testified that she was a known lying police informant and that she did it in order to get off her current charges that were put against her. So it's a person who is constantly in trouble with law enforcement, who is not only getting incentivized in a way to get off of their charges, but also has a $10,000 incentivized reward to come and say these things. And the other issue is that police showed up at her house after Henry Cole made his statement to bring her in to question her, and she thought she was getting arrested for something she had done when she went in. Not that she was getting questioned about her ex-boyfriend or whatever.
I mean, she's already given two different items that were completely false and obviously proved to be so. So her testimony would be like trash at that point.
You would think
so. Forget all the other stuff.
You would think so. As for Henry Cole's statements, while his were pretty consistent, the information he provided wasn't anything that hadn't been released to the public already. He was also known as a, quote, career criminal who would, quote, say anything for money, unquote.
I had a feeling that's where that was going.
And like Laura, he was a known false informer for the police to get off his own charges. Quote, testimonies gathered from Cole's relatives confirmed his reputation for providing false information to police in exchange for leniency. In one case, the lawyer wrote that Cole, quote, served as an informant against his own son to get a deal from authorities, unquote.
Yikes.
So even with no real physical evidence, they took the case to court. On January 6, 2000, after he was indicted for murder, Marcellus' defense requested testing of the bloody fingerprints at the crime scene, but they weren't able to because the police lost them.
Of course. Probably shortly after they did the test results and noticed that they didn't match. Oh, wait, did I say that out loud?
So
that was complete conjecture, allegedly, blah, blah, blah.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what's going through.
I wouldn't know at this point. I know what you've said. So
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not going to lie. I'm a whole state in myself. If Illinois wants to come after me, I'll fight them. I'm the biggest state with the biggest guy. All right. I got you. Anyway, so his defense is like, okay, well, we need additional discovery. And could we please, like, maybe get a continuation on this trial, you know, so we can conduct more forensic testing? Because there's a good amount of evidence that was gathered, like bloody footprints that didn't match Marcellus or DNA under Felicia's fingernails that didn't match him. But these requests were denied by the judge. So they go ahead with the trial, and it begins in June 2001. Here's another fucked up thing that the prosecution did. They struck 6 out of the 7 qualified black candidates from the jury pool, which they're allowed to do, but in a case where it's a black man being accused of killing a white woman seems a bit pointed.
Also, it's supposed to be a jury of your peers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole lot behind that. Like, there's a whole breakdown of that, and like the prosecution coming in and saying, well, we struck this black juror because they're a postal worker, and postal workers are known grumpy people, and we don't want grumpy people on this jury pool. But also, the majority of postal workers in Illinois are black. So it's like, is it, what? I think that's...
Are we saying the same thing?
Yeah.
with yeah. different words?
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of that information. If you go to the Innocence Project's website under Marcellus's case, they go into like pretty deep detail on why this striking of those 6 out of 7 black jurors, and they break it down a lot better than I'm going to because we just don't have time for it. But it's pretty fucked up. I'll say that. In the end, only one black juror was on the jury for Marcellus's trial. During the trial, Henry Cole, the first witness, admitted on the stand that he wouldn't have come forward with his statement had there not been a reward to do so.
Surprise.
Right? Then you remember the laptop. Well, Glenn Roberts, the man who bought the laptop from Marcellus, says he would have mentioned that Marcellus told him that Laura gave him the laptop to sell, but the judge wouldn't allow the statement in, saying it was hearsay. How is that hearsay if he's the one who bought the laptop? First off, like, I don't understand that. And then it gets even worse because then the judge comes back and he said he'd allow it in if Marcellus took the stand.
How does that make any difference?
Well, it's a violation of his Fifth Amendment right. He has the right not to testify.
Well, no, I'm saying that's a weird, like, exchange. I don't feel like that's how that works.
Either way you look at it, it's like a violation of his rights. So you can
also,
either...
Also, if it's hearsay, you don't allow it. You either allow it or you don't allow it. And hearsay is not supposed to be allowed. So if you're going to allow it, then that means it's not actually hearsay.
Yes, it's a circular fucking argument. Makes no sense. This judge is going to piss you off. So the prosecution mostly focused on the two witness testimonies and the calculator and ruler found in Marcellus's car. And of course, the laptop. The defense said that those items could have easily been planted in Marcellus's car by Laura since she had the keys, and that people had seen her with a laptop bag after Marcellus was already in jail for a different crime. The defense also focused on the fact that the forensic evidence that was found at the crime scene wasn't a match to Marcellus. The bloody footprints weren't the right size. and they didn't match any of the shoes that Marcellus owned. The hairs found weren't his, and the DNA under Felicia's fingernails were not a match to Marcellus. So you look at all that and you're like, why the fuck is he even here? Like, what do you have outside of these two witnesses that don't even have that? They don't even have the same statement.
And they're not eyewitnesses either. It's not right. Like they saw this crime happen. Like, that would be one thing. Even what they are attesting to is circumstantial at best. So right. To base an entire case on two witnesses who are presenting circumstantial evidence as it is pretty ridiculous.
But Samantha, the ruler and the calculator. The ruler and the calculator that had no fingerprints. And that was another thing. Like, in the trial, they were like, well, if the ruler... Okay, so if the ruler and the calculator didn't have any fingerprints, you know, what's going on here? And the prosecution was like, well, he wore gloves. And the defense is like, but there were a bunch of fingerprints in the house, bloody fingerprints in the house that you fucking lost. So did he or did he not wear gloves? It seems like a plant. I mean, I don't know. Seems planted.
Seems odd for sure.
Yeah. So DNA on the knife handle was never tested during this trial. This was one piece of forensic evidence that the defense requested more time for testing on, but they were denied. Which you would think, like, again, for 40 plus stab wounds, there's gonna be DNA on that knife. There's no way. If I chop a fucking onion, I've got DNA on my knife. With all of that, okay, so before we move forward, Samantha, all of that information, you're a juror. And you're sitting there and you're told there's no forensic evidence that links this person to the crime scene. The only thing that you have is witness testimony and some stuff that belonged to those people that were in the community vicinity of this person. How are you going to vote?
Well, I wouldn't have been a juror because they would have definitely struck me. But
oh, yeah, I'm out.
I wouldn't have made it.
They're not even calling me.
I would not have made it. What am I going to say? I'm going to ask somebody to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt because it hasn't been done yet. And it ought to just be thrown out in the first place.
I would agree. Well,
like, not even close. Not even close.
I can't even, and even like me telling it to you like that, like there were two quote unquote witnesses.
And there's no motive either.
No, there's not.
Robbery of the laptop? No. Mm-mm,
yeah,
that's not good
I
enough.
Don't, what was the point here? And 40 plus times is not a crime of like opportunity or a robbery. It is a crime of passion.
Or
a
robbery gone wrong? No. Right. That was very intentional. Nobody picks their arm up 40 something times and drives it into somebody else. Like, that's not happening.
I know I don't.
I don't have that kind of strength. I would have to be pissed off.
I'd need to
be able to do that.
Yeah. I'd need to take a nap. That's all I'm saying. I know I said I'd help you guys. You always get one. But the truth is, I don't have a lot of upper body strength. It's going to be all Kelsey in the end. She does.
Probably, yeah.
Anyway, light part aside, with all of that, the jury still convicted Marcellus after only 5 hours of deliberation of first degree murder, first degree robbery, and 2 counts of armed criminal action. Yeah.
I've seen people get off with more evidence on them.
Mm-hmm.
Actual evidence on them.
Yeah, actual evidence. Well, it doesn't stop there because on June 19th, 2001, Marcellus was sentenced to death after only 90 minutes of jury deliberation. And they took a lunch break in that 90 minutes. And like, there's a lot more information that I'm going to provide here. But during like the sentencing phase, the prosecution really painted him as the quote monster. which is like typical of how the 90s treated black men. They really villainized black men and made them seem like criminals. And so they were using that like vein of what they had seeded into communities and into the media to really push this narrative. There's a lot behind it. You know, if you want more information, go into it. But they also use one portion, you know, at the time that he had these charges coming up for murder against him, he was already sentenced and going to be serving 20 years in prison for robbery of a Burger King. And he was a part of a prison coup where they tried to escape. And they made it seem like during the sentencing phase that he did that because he was, you know, only a guilty person would try and escape, you know. But he already got 20 years for this robbery, and then he's getting indicted for murder. I mean, but they didn't bring up the 20-year sentence. They only brought up the murder charge. Which, like, yeah, I guess don't try and escape, but I don't know that I wouldn't do the same thing, honestly.
20 years for robbery seems really high.
Doesn't it, though?
I mean, I've seen people get lesser sentences for murdering people.
It could have been because it might have been armed robbery or something like that with a deadly weapon or something. But it still seems pretty steep to me, honestly. But, you know, it's what it is. So, yeah, 90 minutes to dole out a let's say they only took a 30 minute lunch break, which probably not. So an hour. They took an hour to sentence a man to death. So obviously, Marcellus appeals the conviction on multiple grounds, a list of which includes inflammatory statements made during closing arguments, yes, and admissibility of evidence and witness testimony used. And the court denied these claims and upheld the conviction. And this was his first appeal. In 2003, he filed for post-conviction relief, claiming ineffective assistance of counsel, in which, yes, he had ineffective assistance of counsel, not because his lawyer wasn't good at his job or anything like that, but because his lawyer actually really tried. He really tried, and he did a decent defense based on the time that he was allowed and the information that he was able to get and was given for the trial. But he just wasn't able to do his job properly. And not only was he not allowed to do his job properly and get proper time to do it, here's what they found afterwards in the discovery during, like, once he had time to do, like, discovery after the fact, after he's been sentenced. So there was a ton of impeachment evidence that would have disproved the eyewitness accounts. Not eyewitness, but the witness statements and the witnesses that came forward. And that was withheld from the defense attorney. And not only, like, it wasn't just withheld from him. He requested the information from the prosecution. And the judge said, nah. And so he was like, okay, if you're not going to give me the information from the prosecution, let me get a continuation so that I can discover it on my own. And again, the judge was like, nah. Which feels like a Brady violation to me. I don't know if he knows the information is there, but it's not provided, or if it's just not said at all. Which I would say maybe it's if it wasn't told to him at all that there might be. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't know what a Brady violation would be.
I mean, it's not great either way. But I feel like by him denying it, that kind of makes me think he did know and didn't right. want him to find it.
Same.
Because I feel like if he didn't know, why are you arguing this? Why is this a problem? That's a perfectly reasonable request. So that right. doesn't make any sense.
Because you don't want something like a Brady violation to come up. Because that's an automatic dismissal of the charges. Like, you get out. Like, that's done. Done and done, my friend. So in the post-conviction relief filing, he claimed his lawyer failed to test forensic evidence, quote, blood, hair, and fibers, against the witness who had access to all of the other evidence, Laura Asaro. Which, yeah.
Which, in theory, should have been done, if for no other reason than to eliminate her as a suspect.
Right, because she had access to all of it.
Well, and she's been mentioned in all of this. Every single thing that they've brought forward, she had something to do with. So, I mean,
that's a really good point. That's a really good point, because I'm going to tell you their denial for this. The claim was denied in 2005, and the conviction was again upheld. Three different courts at this point have looked at this information and said, nah, we uphold it. So the appellate court, the Supreme Court, and the trial court have all said pass.
And by Supreme Court, you're talking about state Supreme, just to clarify.
So Illinois State Supreme Court, yeah. So in 2006, Marcellus's attorneys filed for federal relief. So this is now the federal court. In the filing, they requested additional forensic testing be done on the evidence and compared to Laura Asaro, as well as against the criminal database that holds all the information to fucking begin with. Because none of it matches Marcellus. Let's go ahead and do the one person who had access to everything, as well as go ahead and toss it in that database that you have a bunch of data for, DNA data for.
What's the worst that could happen? You find a match?
Right? This was denied by federal court, stating there was no good cause for this testing. They also said it was made clear in his trial that the evidence didn't match him or the victim or the victim's family. Which, yeah, it didn't. That's not what they're claiming. They're saying, hey, there's somebody else who handled all of this evidence. Have you tested it against her DNA? Have you tested it against anybody else's DNA?
And have you like, actually tested this against anything other than this one person who it came back negative against?
Right. That's not like we know it doesn't match him. We're trying to tell you it matches somebody else. Like your point is moot here.
It does belong to somebody. How about we find out who? Just a thought. Yeah.
And which that kind of goes into like the whole like anytime somebody's convicted of something, it's really hard to get them off of that conviction. Regardless, you could have a videotape of them not doing it and somebody else. But until you have somebody else to point the finger at a lot of the time, they don't care. But if you don't test the DNA and find that somebody else, nothing is going to happen. So after this was denied, Marcellus Williams was then given his first execution date of January 28, 2015. Thankfully, the same year, the Missouri Supreme Court... Why is it Missouri? I thought it was Illinois. Did I get this wrong the whole time? It might have been Missouri. Oops. It was Missouri the whole time. Thankfully, the same year, the Missouri Supreme Court stayed Mr. Williams' execution and appointed a special master to review DNA testing for potentially exculpatory evidence. This testing showed that Mr. Williams was not the source of male DNA found on the murder weapon. So now everything that has DNA, testable DNA, at the murder scene does not match Marcellus. And this is really good because the governor at the time, you know, appointing this group to review it means that it stays further executions, all of that stuff. So why are we here talking about it and he has less than 50 days? Well, in 2017, after the testing completed, but without conducting a hearing or making any findings based on the outcome of the testing, the appointed special master sent Mr. Williams' case back to the Missouri Supreme Court. That court, also without considering the DNA testing results, again scheduled Marcellus another execution date. So, they are given new evidence that says that his DNA was not on the murder weapon, and they did not review it, and they did not review the notes from this special master, and they went ahead and scheduled another execution date anyway. And that's the second one. Recognizing that the new evidence raised serious doubts about Marcellus's guilt, the then governor, Eric Greitens, stayed the execution and convened a board of inquiry to investigate the case on August 22nd, 2017. And this was just a couple of hours before Marcellus was supposed to be killed. He had already eaten his last meal. That's how close it was. Under Missouri law, the stay was to remain in place until the Board of Inquiry concluded its review and issued a formal report. So you have a then governor staying in execution, has a board appointed to it to do their own inquiry into it and come up with a report for their findings, right? And that's in 2017. However, in June 2023, while the Board of Inquiry's review was still ongoing, the new governor, Mike Parsons, the son of a bitch, without warning or notice, dissolved the board without a report or recommendation from the board.
So we're just doing whatever we want now. We're not.
Yeah.
There's no laws protecting people anymore. There's no point for this. So I'm just going to get rid of it.
Yeah. Pretty much. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey then promptly sought a new execution date. So not only are they disbanding this board that's reviewing it, they're going ahead and they're gotta kill him. We got a quota to meet. You know? Marcellus then sued Governor Parsons because the dissolution of the board without a report or recommendation violated the law and his constitutional rights, which it does. So the Board of Inquiry is supposed to finish their inquiry and give a report before it can be disbanded. The governor tried to dismiss the lawsuit, but a Cole County civil judge denied his request.
Wait. So he's doing a lawsuit against this guy, and this guy is just like, nah, that has no merit.
Yeah. So Marcellus is like, hey, you're trying to kill me. Yeah. I'm going to sue you for taking away my rights. And the governor's like, nah, how about you dismiss this? And the judge is like, no. The fuck? No. Which it's like the only judge.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
He's like the only judge in Missouri who actually is like, no, what is going on? Are you serious right now? Is this a joke?
Am I being a punk right now?
Well, Ashton Kutcher, please stand up. Oh, man. The governor then asked the Missouri Supreme Court to intervene. The Missouri Supreme Court agreed to intervene, and on June 4th, 2024, just a few weeks ago, it dismissed the lawsuit and immediately scheduled Marcellus's execution for September 24th, 2024. After the exculpatory DNA evidence was brought to his attention, St. Louis County prosecuting attorney Wesley... This is a prosecuting attorney. Not a defense attorney, a prosecuting attorney, reviewed Marcellus's case. The special prosecutor reviewed the findings of three independent DNA experts. All three concluded that Marcellus was not the source of the male DNA on the weapon and therefore could not have killed Miss Gale. Marcellus's exclusion from the murder weapon is consistent with his exclusion from other forensic evidence collected from the crime scene, including bloody shoe prints and hairs found near the victim's body. Recognizing that new evidence suggested that Mr. Williams is actually innocent, the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney filed a motion to vacate Marcellus's conviction in January of 2024. The motion states, quote, DNA evidence supporting a conclusion that Mr. Williams was not the individual who stabbed Miss Gale has never been considered by any court. This therefore considered evidence, when paired with the relative paucity of other credible evidence supporting guilt, casts inexorable doubt on Mr. Williams' conviction and sentence. The prosecuting attorney urged the circuit court, quote, to begin the process of correcting this manifest injustice by holding a hearing on the newfound evidence in the integrity of Mr. Williams' conviction, unquote. So you have a prosecuting attorney who looked at this evidence and was like, no, we can't kill this person. Meanwhile, you have the Supreme Court, you have the attorney generals fast-tracking an execution. I'm flummoxed.
I don't understand.
I'm flummoxed. I'm flabbergasted. I'm all the F words.
It's one thing to double down when you've royally fucked up and try to hide your crime. It's another to literally sentence somebody to death on something like this. Like, this is...
Yeah.
This is straight up...
murder.
I mean... I don't know how you could call it anything else.
It's judicial murder. It's literally you are going through the judicial system to murder somebody. And you're doing everything in your power to make sure it happens before anybody can come in and say, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't do this. How about, it seems kind of weird. Maybe we don't. I don't know. So. I have a little bit more left, but this one part I wanted to read directly from the Innocence Project, and it's maybe you'll get a better understanding of like the Missouri court system, judicial system from this. So, although the prosecuting attorney's motion remains pending and the law requires the court to hold a hearing on it, the Missouri Attorney General has taken the position that Mr. Williams' innocence does not matter and that Missouri Supreme Court has scheduled his execution. The Missouri Attorney General's office has argued in other death penalty cases that even DNA evidence of innocence is not enough to stop an execution. In 2003, oral arguments before the Missouri Supreme Court, Justice Laura Denver Stith asked Assistant Attorney General Frank Jung, quote, are you suggesting even if we find that Mr. Amreen is actually innocent, he should be executed? Unquote. Quote, this is correct, Your Honor, Jung replied. The Missouri Supreme Court ultimately disagreed and Mr. Amreen was exonerated. But over 20 years later, the same arguments are still being made.
What part of this, beyond a reasonable doubt? That's the requirement. That literally is reasonable doubt. That's inserting doubt into this.
And you have
not possible to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt with that. So by law, you are incorrect, sir. That's not how that works.
Yes. And I think it's really telling that an attorney general's for the state is the one that's making an argument as fucking bananas as that, as a DNA evidence doesn't exclude somebody from being sentenced to death. We're not talking about a prosecuting attorney. It's a attorney general's office. It's fucked up. It's fucked up. It doesn't matter. Samantha, you could be murdered in your house right now. I can be convicted of it, but it doesn't matter if my DNA is not there. Wasn't even in the state. Doesn't matter. Got to meet that quota. So a little bit more from that. The Missouri Attorney General's office has opposed every innocence case for the last 30 years, including every attempt made by a local prosecutor to... Local prosecutors are the ones who are trying to overturn these, by the way. To overturn a conviction on the basis of innocence, as the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney is doing with Mr. Williams' case. In 2021 and 2023, Kevin Strickland and Lamar Johnson were exonerated despite the Attorney General's attempts to thwart the prosecutor's motions to vacate. So it's not just Marcellus that this is happening to. It was not just... This is happening consistently in that county, in that state. I don't know how it you can continue to do something like this. So, where are we today? The Circuit Court of St. Louis County, Missouri, scheduled a hearing for August 21st. That's in less than 2 weeks, 2024, to assess the clear and convincing evidence of actual innocence that led prosecuting attorney Wesley Bell to move to vacate Marcellus Williams' wrongful conviction and death sentence. Marcellus Williams is scheduled to be executed only a month later, on September 2024, for a crime that DNA proves he did not commit. The St. Louis County prosecuting attorney reviewed these DNA results and filed a motion to vacate Mr. Williams' conviction because he believed the DNA results proved by clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Williams did not commit this crime. Although the circuit court has not yet scheduled a hearing to address this motion, and no court has ever considered a new exculpatory evidence, the Missouri Supreme Court set an execution date for Marcellus Williams. So he has a court date in a couple of weeks to see if this is even worth reviewing, but he already has a death date, an execution date, a murder date. They're going to murder him. So, yeah, that's Marcellus Williams. Thoughts?
That's infuriating on so many different levels. Yeah, I still am of the mindset that I cannot contemplate or understand, even begin to understand, how any person could deem another person's life that invaluable. Almost like they're not human. I just don't get it. And then your pride is more important than a human being's life.
Yes.
You're being right, quote unquote. And in fact, it's not even right at this point, because they're even saying, even if we're wrong, we're not wrong.
Uh-huh.
We're still going to do it. Like, what? There is some serious shady shit going on. That's just, it makes no sense whatsoever. Like, it's so far outside of your legal rights that it's just mind blowing.
I don't know how they're getting away with it. That's my whole thing, you know. And I don't know why more people aren't talking about it, I guess. It's just, this is a man who didn't do this. And it is blatantly obvious that he didn't do it. There's DNA evidence that he didn't do it. And I know that DNA is not the end all be all of all of it, but as violent as this crime was, and as much evidence that was left behind, Felicia Gale's murderer is not being sentenced to death. An innocent man is.
No, and the thing that always bothers me about these is somebody's still out there that did it. And y'all are too busy chasing your own tails and covering your own ass to actually look for the person who did this, which means they have the ability to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that other person was not done by the same person, which I have a hard time believing, even if that's not the case, if he got away with this, I guarantee they've done it since.
Yeah.
There's just no way.
Yes. That's my whole thing. Is like, again, and again, you can make the argument that, you know, Laura, you know, had the evidence on her from the crime scene, but the DNA evidence that was on the knife was an unknown male. So she, you know, speculation, wild speculation, she could have been working with somebody else and they gave her this stuff to do. Or, I don't know, when she was being interviewed by the police and they were like, do you know anything about this Marcellus Williams? We'll drop some charges from you. You know what? There was some stuff missing. You know, one thing leads to another. You never know. I wouldn't put it past it. I'm not saying that they did anything like that, but I wouldn't put it past them. With the way this shady shit has gone down, anytime Marcellus fights back, he gets an execution date. And the last time he had his last meal before they called it off, or they stayed it. That's traumatizing.
I mean, this whole thing is.
I'm real mad. I'm big mad.
All right. Good job, I guess, in covering the details and making us aware of this case. Thank you for covering it. It sucks and it's disgusting. The whole thing. People not doing their jobs. They got they got one job and they're blatantly not doing it. So yeah, infuriating.
There's a lot of people who have jobs that if, you know, like me, if I don't do my job, it's not a huge deal. Like, nobody's really going to be hurt. There might be some financial implications for the public, but not that huge. But some people that I would like them to do their jobs and do it properly are like, I don't know, doctors, police officers. That's a big one up there for me. And attorneys
of all kinds,
judges, you know,
those the are, ones that are supposed to know the law, maybe follow it.
Politicians,
yeah, firefighters, politicians, you know, it seems that would be the bare minimum. It's really hard for me to put my head around a person who is looking at this and is fast tracking a death sentence for somebody be carried out. And he's doing everything in his power to ensure that the review of his case doesn't happen before his execution date comes through. And normally you would have a stay of execution, but you can't do that until that preliminary court hearing happens where they review it and say, yes, we need to have an actual review of this. Which that attorney general has tried to get a continuation on. Which was not given to Marcellus in his original trial. He's like, I'd like a continuation to review this information. Okay, well, he's scheduled for death in 3 weeks after this. So, no. The fuck? So, yeah. Do what you can. Go to the link in the show notes. I'm going to say it for the 50th time. Click on it. It literally takes like 2 minutes. I did it. I know Kelsey did it. Samantha did it. I sent it to like all of my friends and family. Was like, hey, it takes 2 minutes. This guy didn't do it. Fill it out. Yeah. Fill it out. Submit it. Especially if you live in Missouri. Because your voice matters a lot there. Until next time. We love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye. The Reaper.